Now, before we get to the main message today, I'd like to just take a moment to utterly condemn the despicable actions of Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, who needs to be criticized and excoriated for her criminal lack of ambition. There are, as we record this, at least 6 days left, Ms. Pelosi. That's plenty of time to get at least two more impeachments on the record before Donald Trump leaves office. If the most sacred and important and serious entire procedure in the entire government is reduced to basically an FU memo, then you've got plenty of time to get more of those in on the records. And I just want to tell you, Nancy, we won't forget it. Now, before I get to the other message, one other thing I want to mention. This is something I learned over at Smarter Every Day. Dustin Sandin has a tremendous program over there. We'll put a link to it below. It's just everyday science, and it's one of my favorite channels. He's got 9.6 million subscribers as I record this. And I just want to use a technique that he used. Here at BillWhittle.com, we have a membership that starts at $9.95 a month. We do 11 shows a week. And if my math is correct, that comes out to 22 cents per show. So I'm going to do what Dustin does so successfully. I'm going to get back to the show, going to let you watch the whole show, and then I'm going to challenge you at the end to see if it was worth your 22 cents. And if it is, maybe we can talk you into subscribing. Now, for those of you with an education that may have preceded the great union takeover of public American schools, that term lashed to the mast may sound familiar to you, and if it does, it's because it comes from one of the great pieces of literature ever written, and that is the Odyssey, written by Homer. Homer wrote the Battle of Troy, the Trojan War, the Greeks against the Trojans, in the Iliad, and then he wrote a second epic poem called the Odyssey, and it was about Odysseus. It was about his journey home. Odysseus, by the way, is my favorite Greek character. I just really, really admire Odysseus. I admire Odysseus because he wasn't the strongest warrior, wasn't the most powerful, he wasn't the most charismatic, he wasn't the king, he wasn't any of those things. But Odysseus was the smartest of the Greeks. He was genuinely the living description of crazy like a fox. As he was preparing to return home to his island of Ithaca, the goddess Circe warned him about one of the dangers he was going to encounter on his way home. He was going to pass a patch of the sea, and on this little, basically just a collection of rocks coming out of the ocean, he would see three stunningly beautiful women called the Sirens. The Sirens sang a song that was so beautiful that it was irresistible. It was absolutely irresistible. No mortal man could listen to the song of the Sirens without steering directly for that little patch of rocks and jumping out on the onto the rocks, hanging out with these three hot babes for a little Netflix and chill. But the catch is, and what Circe warned Odysseus about, is simply this: the Sirens eat sailors. That's their food source. And the entire thing works like this. Their song is bait. They would sing a song that was so irresistible that sailors would be drawn irresistibly to the island, and then they'd smash their boat on the rocks, and then the Sirens would get to chow down for another couple days until the next group of naive idiots came along. Now we get to the absolute genius of Odysseus. See, Odysseus was a romantic, and he was an idealist, and he was all of those things, but he was also very wise and very practical. He wanted to hear that song. If there was a song that was so beautiful that it could not be resisted, he wanted to hear it. But unlike every other Greek captain or Greek sailor that had heard of this island or run into this challenge before, he had the fundamental humility to realize that if every single person was being drawn onto these rocks, if the gods themselves said it was irresistible, then Odysseus had the humility to realize that there was nothing particularly special about him. And if he wanted to hear the siren song, hear this beautiful song, then he was going to be taking his ship onto the rocks, and he and the rest of his crew were going to die. So he wanted to hear a song that was irresistible, and he wanted to survive it, which means, when you get right down to it, that Odysseus had an engineering problem. So what he did was, he lashed himself to the mast, and he gave his crew standing orders. He said, no matter what happens, no matter what I say, no matter what I do, you will not listen to me until I stop resisting. And then, in the final act of wisdom, he basically handed out wax had every single member of his crew put wax in their ears, lots of it, bound it around their heads so they couldn't hear a thing. So they start sailing close to this island. And as they get closer and closer, he begins to hear the siren song. And as these women come into view and he sees how beautiful they are and hears the song, he realizes that he was wrong about them, that this whole thing that Circe told them was a lie. No, the sirens were going to help him get home in a hurry. They were beautiful people and they were there to assist him. And he basically started screaming to his crew, take us over there. You don't realize we've made a terrible mistake. We're wrong. And the sirens continued their song. And Odysseus strained against the ropes and he wanted to go there more than anything. He would have simply chewed through them if he could have reached them with his mouth. But the crew didn't hear the song, and they kept on sailing. And Odysseus was ripping himself to pieces, trying to untie himself from the mast so that he could swim over to these beautiful women that were not only going to help him, but that he would have a fairly good time being helped with. And finally, they sailed out of range of the song of the sirens, and after he stopped struggling and some time had gone by, he basically realized the crew would come over and they untied him. And that's how Odysseus did the impossible. He got to listen to irresistible temptation, got to experience irresistible temptation, but he was wise enough to know that it was going to be irresistible. He knew he wasn't strong enough to resist it, so he was clever enough to make sure that he removed his ability to respond to it. So what does that have to do with everything? Well, when you look at the actions of people like Nancy Pelosi and all the rest of it, all of it, the entire political class, we realize that we are where we are for the same reason that most every civilization has gone before us has gotten to where they are, including the Greeks, I might add, that the rot that destroys a civilization comes from the top. The Russians say a fish rots from the head down. The political class of this country, the professional politicians, are always dubious, but now they are criminally negligent. They have no respect for the people. They have no respect for the people. They have no ability to connect to the people. Most of them, like Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden, many, many others, have been there for 30, 40, 50 years. They know they can't be removed. The siren song of political power has tempted them and turned them into evil. And frankly, to be honest with you, the kind of person that wants to go and hear that music up close is somebody you should be suspicious of in the first place. So what we need is we need an engineering solution to the problem of professional politicians. And I think, after much consideration, that the only way to do this is to look at the example of Odysseus and say to ourselves that political power is an irresistible temptation. No matter what your intentions are going into it, it is irresistible. That virtually everybody who goes into politics at any level, but especially at the national level, is going to succumb to the peer pressure of what the other politicians are telling them, the constant ongoing pressure from the largely extremely liberal or progressive, I should say, immortal bureaucracy of aides and assistants. They're tempted by the argument that this is simply how things are done here and there's nothing you can do about it. But mostly they're tempted by the power and the fame and the money that comes while you're in office in order to get reelected. The way that politicians get rich while they're in office is they accept perfectly legal campaign donations. And since they are so determined to be reelected, then they realize, and the people who are writing the checks realize, that if I help this politician out with his reelection, which is his only reason for existence, he's not there for any other reason. He's there to get in on the gravy train and stay there. So interest groups realize that if they write a check to that person's reelection campaign, then they'll get something in return. They'll get a vote. And that's how it happens. Things have gotten so bad and people are so disgusted that, in my opinion, there's only one thing that could light this country on fire in terms of getting votes. If you're going to go to the American people with this completely idealistic of changing politics as it exists in this cynical age of ours, then the only way people are going to believe you is if you can prove to them that you're going to be as good as your word. And the way I think you do that is you create a political party that essentially has a brand, the way the Republican Party originally had a brand. And the brand is this: we believe in citizens running the country. We believe in actual democracy and democratic election to a republic of laws that apply to everybody. This is what our entire party is about. We believe in government of ourselves and by ourselves. We think that the professional, personal, eternal political class is the source of all of our problems here, and we believe in citizens. And so our promise to you is a very simple one. We will have every single member of this party sign a legally binding contract that says that they will not run for re-election for that same office. If we find somebody really good as a representative, then they can run as a senator or governor or president. But there's no incumbency. And that's our brand. That's our promise. And it's not just a promise. It's a contract. It is a legally binding contract. And people will ask you, well, what does that mean exactly? And then you say, well, it means that we don't trust ourselves or anybody to resist the temptation of public office. So we're going to tie ourselves down before we go to Washington or Sacramento or whatever. If you're making this pitch to somebody face-to-face or in a meeting, you say to them, I have signed a contract, either with the political party or whoever, doesn't matter. I've signed a legally binding contract that says that I am not going to seek re-election with severe penalties if I break that contract. I'm coming back after my first term. I'm coming back, and I have to come back. It's not my promise. It's not what I hope to do. I am legally bound to come back after one term. Now, if you were to go to people with that, in the first election cycle, which I see as 2022, you will convince enough people that this idea is novel enough that you'll get some people elected. But the power of this idea will not come with the first election cycle. The power of this idea will come with the second election cycle, because it will take the second election cycle, in other words, 2024, for people to realize, for voters to realize, that you're telling the truth, that the people you sent there 2 years ago are all coming home, every single one of them. Not one of them is running for re-election. They did their duty as citizens, and now they're coming home. We think, because progressives and Democrats are so deeply entrenched in the government, we think that the government belongs to them, but the government belongs to whoever shows up. We could flush the entire Congress in one election cycle. That's how it's designed. And we could certainly, if we were to take the entire resources of 100 million patriots and strategically apply them to the races where people who had made this commitment would go to their state legislatures in the states that have these electronic voting machines and all the rest of those things, I genuinely believe you could put enough people into the state legislatures of those offices in order to change those voting laws. But put that aside for a minute. Just put that aside. This message, if this is the brand of this political party, then this message applies to everyone. It's not just about Republicans or conservatives, it applies to everybody. I would be more than willing, and I'm making a commitment right now, I not only would be willing, but I will absolutely go into inner city Chicago, into a completely hostile, potentially hostile, black church, let's say, and I guarantee you that after 5 minutes, they won't be hostile, and I bet you another dollar that after an hour, they'll be voting for this. And I could take the same exact message into Mexican Barrio in East LA. I could take the message anywhere. If you were to go into those districts and say to them simply this, look, not a Republican and I'm not a Democrat. I think people should be left alone. I think the job of the government is to do the minimum amount of things and get out of the way so that people's lives can be improved. I'm not saying we burn down the house that we're living in before we build the new house. So I'm not saying we're going to immediately cut welfare and all the other stuff, but people would be better off if they were in charge of their own destiny. That kind of an argument. I think you'd win across the board. I think you'd win 50 states. I genuinely believe it. Now, as with Odysseus, there are engineering problems that have to be overcome here, and many of them. I'm not going to be stopped by people who are saying, it's never going to work. I will certainly listen to people who say, this is a major obstacle that you'll have to overcome, or this is going to be a serious issue, or how do you get around the problem of this? That kind of criticism is exactly what we need. But to hear people say, no, it'll never work, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. I think the examples are there in front of us, and the single greatest example is the American Revolution. The American Revolution took a population that was 90% loyal to the king and succeeded in starting a new nation because the the founding fathers had an idea that was so revolutionary, so far out of the box, and so much in the interest of the people who would have to make the decision, that they not only won the revolution and won the war, they created the greatest country in the history of the world, which we have allowed to decay through inaction. And this is a way to get it back. But perhaps even more importantly than that, it's going to act as a filter on the front end. In other words, those people who want to get into politics in order to stay in politics are not going to have anything to do with us. They're going to run away from us as fast as they can. If we were to do something like this, we would filter out at the front end all of the people who were determined to get into politics so they could be comfortable for the rest of their lives. And furthermore, we would provide some sense of comfort or surety for the people that don't want to get into politics but realize that they have to. We're basically saying to them, no, you do get to go home after your term. You're not going to stay there. We're not going to let you stay there. You get to go home back to your business and your family and so on. That's the idea. And I think it's going to sell and I think it's going to work. So maybe tomorrow we'll talk about sort of a grand strategy, including all of this. But right now, what I want to ask you is, was this show worth 22 cents to you? Was it? If not, I'll try harder. I can't reduce the membership price because that's not fair to the people who are already paid and continue to pay. We got to 56% of our goal and it started to slow down, and I can't let it slow down until we get all the way there. So was this worth 22 cents to you? I hope it was. If it wasn't, I've got more work to do. We're going to be bringing in more shows. We've already got the resources to do that because of the people that stepped up. Not asking for a lot of money, but you're going to have to pay for it because we have spent the last 50 years watching this just blow away and not knowing what to do about it, and therefore not doing anything. So we'll see. We've still got a week left, I guess, a little less than, to reach that goal of 1,000 new members. We're past 500, so think about it. That'll do it for this edition of Moving Back to America. We'll see you tomorrow right here at BillWhittle.com.